Are you rich? If so, congratulations. If not, have you wondered how rich people got that way? Then you might want to hear these key insights from the new book, As Gods Among Men, A History of the Rich in the West by Guido Alfani. Guido is a professor of economic history at Bocconi University in Milan, Italy. He's also an affiliated scholar at the Stone Center on Socioeconomic Inequality, a research associate at the Cage Research Center, and a research fellow of the Center for Economic Policy Research in London. Here he is.
Hello, BookBytes listeners. My name is Guido Alfani, and I'm a professor of economic history at Bocconi University, Milan. Today, I'm sharing with you five of the key insights from my book, As Gods Among Men, A History of the Rich in the West. Insight number one. Across history, the rich have struggled to find a proper place in society. Today, Western societies seem obsessed with the rich, who they are, how they became wealthy, how they behave or misbehave. The rich, and especially the super rich, are an ever-growing object of discussion, and they are alternatively admired and flattered or blamed and scorned. Some super rich even choose to become celebrities. So much seems to have changed from the Middle Ages, when the rich were required not to appear to be wealthy, or at least not to show the full extent of their wealth, as the excessive accumulation of material resources was considered sinful and even damaging to the correct functioning of a perfect Christian society. And yet, how much has really changed? The very fact that the rich are the object of so much discussion, today as in the past, suggests that they struggle to find or to be given a proper place in society, again today as in the past. This was very clear in the Middle Ages, when the rich were considered sinners by default, and their sin was avarice or greed. Of course, the feudal society of the Middle Ages had no quarrel with the wealth of the nobility, while superior access to resources was believed to correspond to God's plans. It was the wealth of some among the commoners that created a problem, especially when, from the 11th century, the expansion of long-range trade, including by sea, began to offer unprecedented opportunities for building entrepreneurial fortunes. The Greek theologian of the 13th century, Thomas Aquinas, even advised rulers to try to prevent their citizens from getting involved in large-scale trade, let alone in finance. All this led the rich to be scorned and, at the same time, generated in them a constant worry about the afterlife, which often induced them to leave substantial bequests to charities and to religious institutions to atone for their sins. Some went even further, like Cosimo de' Medici, who in 1464, when he felt that his life was coming to an end, sought a bull or absolution directly from the Pope. After all, the Pope knew much about the economic sins of the Medicis, who were his bankers. Insight number two. The main social role assigned to the rich from the end of the Middle Ages is to help their communities in times of crisis. By the early 15th century, the presence within the community of extremely wealthy individuals could no longer be dismissed as an anomaly. Beginning with economically advanced areas, such as Central and Northern Italy, the rich were assigned a specific social role, to act as private reserves of money in which the community could tap in times of dire need. The Tuscan humanist Poggio Bracciolini made this point in a particularly clear way in his treatise On Avarice, completed in 1428. He argued that all those cities that follow the tradition of instituting public granaries to build up food reserves should also be well provided of, and here I quote, many greedy individuals in order to constitute a kind of private barn of money able to be of assistance to everybody, end of quote. And what better opportunity could the rich have to perform this role than a major crisis such as a plague, a famine, or a war? It is primarily by acting as barns of money to the benefit of the public that the Western rich became socially acceptable. There is abundant historical evidence that for centuries they have dutifully fulfilled this role in a variety of ways, which included accepting to pay exceptional contributions or to provide loans, even forced loans, to public authorities and governments. Insight number three. The rich today have shut the doors to their barns of money and have been exceptionally reluctant to help their communities in times of crisis. In the last 15 years or so, we have gone from a crisis to another, from the Great Recession to the sovereign debt crisis in Europe to COVID-19 to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So this appears to be prime time for the rich to fulfill the traditional role as barns of money, and indeed, Proposals for increasing the taxes paid by the richest strata of society, even just as a temporary measure, have entered the political debate in many Western countries. But so far, in most countries, these proposals have achieved little or nothing, and the rich themselves have often appeared to oppose fiscal reforms aimed at making them contribute more. Unfortunately, by doing so, they have stripped the public of resources which could have been used to mitigate the consequences of the crisis for society as a whole, and more importantly, they have made, once again, the social role that they perform somewhat unclear. Insight number 4. Charity and philanthropy are no substitutes for taxation, and they might reflect magnificence instead of munificence. To fulfill the social role of contributing with their private resources to deal with the crisis, the rich must allow the collectivity to tap into those resources, usually by means of taxation. And the public must be allowed to decide, through representative and democratic institutions, how such resources will be used. Instead, modern charity might be used to dodge taxation, and philanthropy might in practice hide what in antiquity and in the Middle Ages was called magnificence, which means to do great deeds. In the 15th century, another humanist, Giovanni Pontano, praised Cosimo de' Medici because he, and I quote, imitated the ancient magnificence both in building churches and villas and in founding libraries. Not only did he imitate, but he was the first to revive the custom of changing private wealth into public benefit and into an ornament of the fatherland. But Cosimo de' Medici knew perfectly well that magnificence implies a claim to have a right to rule, and it is not by chance that he was the first of the Medici to acquire a de facto dominion over the city of Florence. The problem is that if the magnificence of the super rich becomes confused with munificence, which refers to free acts of generosity, then at the very least we risk becoming unaware of which kind of bargain we are being offered. To be explicit, today giving might be used to acquire influence over society and politics in ways that are not openly acknowledged and that we fail to understand or even just to perceive. Which is another reason why the supposedly free giving from the rich could not be seen from the point of view of the collectivity as a reasonable or even a preferable alternative to fair taxation. Insight number 5. The involvement of the super rich in politics has always been seen as somewhat problematic. Medieval political writers, such as the 14th century French philosopher Nicolas Rehm, argued that cities which are governed democratically should banish the super rich because they are, and I quote, so unequal and exceed and overcome the others regarding their political power so much that it is reasonable to think that they are among the others as God is among men. Hence the title of my own book. Their fears were well-grounded, and the story of Cosimo de' Medici is again the best illustration. In 1433, when he already was one of the richest men in Europe, he was accused by his political enemies of intending to upturn the Florentine Republican government, and he was exiled. Problem is, Florence then went on to lose a war against the Republic of Lucca and risk financial collapse. So in 1434, Cosimo was recalled and hailed as the benefactor of his country because he was willing to use his private resources to bail out the state. From that year, he also increased his activities as a philanthropist and patron of the arts and culture. In other words, he expanded his magnificence. And he initiated his de facto rulership of Florence. He had truly become as a god among men. Worries about the exceptional political influence of the super rich have been prevalent across the West from the Middle Ages to the modern age. Think of the debate about the growing concentration of economic and financial power in the United States in the first decades of the 20th century, which led to many, largely bipartisan, worries that a few super rich individuals might have determined the national politics as well. However, in the 21st century, the rich appear to have acquired an exceptional ability to influence politics, and, as I argue in the book, this is also a reason to worry. Thank you for listening to my Book Bites. I hope that you enjoyed the book, which is full of interesting historical details and of examples from across Western history.
Thank you, Guido. That was 5 big ideas from As Gods Among Men, A History of the Rich in the West by Guido Alfani. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.